Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, November 11th, 2021. Bogquia's port of entry at Big Bend National Park to reopen Wednesday. Photo courtesy of C. Hoyt and the National Park Service. Once the port of entry reopens on November 17th, park visitors will once again have the opportunity to visit the village of Bogquia's, Mexico, across the river from the Big Bend National Park. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Bogquia's. The Bogquia's port of entry at Big Bend National Park is set to reopen on November 17th after nearly 20 months of closures, giving the Park Service a few more days to prepare after the Biden administration announced the opening of land borders to tourists on November 8th. The crossing at Bogquia's is unique among ports of entry because it is the only border crossing unstaffed by Customs and Border Protection. Instead, a national park ranger is staffed on site to assist tourists with questions about visiting the area, and when visitors return from their trip to Mexico, they are put on a video call with an agent in El Paso. The border crossing will be open 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Wednesday through Sunday, in keeping with its normal winter schedule. At low water, expected throughout this winter, visitors to Bogquia's can cross the river on foot or can pay the Bogquia's International Ferry a small cash fee to cross in a rowboat. To return to the United States, travelers will be required to show official documentation, including proof of vaccination for non-U.S. citizens. We are delighted to reopen the Bogquia's port of entry, as visiting our neighbors across the river is an integral part of the Big Bend National Park experience, said Park Superintendent Bob Krumenacher in a press release. Far West Texas celebrates its veterans. Far West Texas. Today is Veterans Day, a holiday where the United States recognizes and celebrates its military veterans. Across the Big Bend, ceremonies will honor those who have served in the armed forces, and in the city of Marfa, the city-owned USO building will soon reopen as a regular gathering space for veterans. This morning, all veterans are invited to attend a special Veterans Day program hosted by Marfa ISD. At 10 a.m., the program will begin, welcoming a guest speaker in the Marfa Shorthorn Gym. Afterward, a lunch will be provided by Sheriff Danny Dominguez. The long-standing event was shuttered last year due to COVID-19 concerns, but this year, the school will welcome back attendees for the ceremony and meal. Sheriff Dominguez's barbecue meal will also make its way to Presidio, where his deputies and Presidio Independent School District police officers will serve it at a Veterans Appreciation Luncheon on Thursday in the Presidio Elementary School gym from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. All veterans are invited to the meal and will be treated to entertainment courtesy of the Presidio Elementary School students and Presidio High School band. Later in the afternoon, veterans will be honored with a service at the Fort Davis National Historic Site. The Fort Davis Chamber of Commerce and the Fort will welcome guests at 4 p.m. for a presentation of the colors and a keynote speaker address. The event is open to veterans, their families, and the general public, and admission to the fort is free for all event attendees. The ceremony will be held outdoors on the porch of the historic barracks, with plenty of room to spread out. Chairs will be provided for guests, or guests can bring their own. In the event of very cold or bad weather, the ceremony will be canceled. The Fort Davis National Historic Site is in North Fort Davis at 101 LT Flipper Drive, number 1379. Visit https://www.nps.gov/FODA to contact the Fort Davis National Historic Site for further information. Finally, the City of Marfa announced that it will be welcoming veterans back to the United Services Organization, USO, building by reviving an old tradition. Along with its usual visitor center operating in the front entry, the building will return to its use as a gathering space for vets. Starting Thursday, November 18th, the hall will be open as a meeting place where veterans can sit and socialize over coffee and snacks. For now, we are beginning with a place for vets to come together, reminisce, and continue the historic purpose of the USO Hall, said Marfa Tourism Director Abby Boyd. The hall will open every Thursday from 8 a.m. to noon, but as interest grows, the city may add more hours or special programs. Marfa City Council reviews broadband survey results, junk vehicle policies, and road improvements in latest council meeting. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. City Council members gathered this past Tuesday at City Hall to work their way through a host of issues, including Presidio County's broadband infrastructure, junk vehicle removal, and ongoing road improvement efforts. Kicking off the meeting was Sierra Seas, a representative of Connected Nation Texas, a nonprofit which conducts studies and advocates for greater community internet access. Seas presented briefly on an extensive survey conducted in Presidio County to get a better picture of residents' challenges concerning internet connectivity. The survey, which was also conducted in Brewster and Jeff Davis counties, has been in the works since March and is meant to serve as a stepping-off point for local policymakers. Their detailed findings and a community action plan is publicly available online. https://connectednation.org/presidio-county-texas/. The survey found homes that did not subscribe to an internet provider either cited cost or not owning a computer. Only 33.58% of homes have adequate internet speeds needed to run multiple devices. Statewide, the number is much higher at 92.5%. Slow speeds and reliable web connections were an issue for private residences as well as businesses, with 61% of homes reporting dissatisfaction with their internet service provider and 45% of businesses. Average connection speed in Presidio was 12 megabits per second per household, which supports about three devices. Monthly cost for internet in the county was also nearly double what is considered to be affordable. In addition to focusing on underserved communities and internet affordability, one of Connected Nation Texas' key recommendations moving forward is to centralize broadband expansion and improvement efforts under the Tri-County Broadband Alliance. To date, TCBA has been actively involved in promoting community surveys and attending monthly meetings with CN Texas. With a refreshed mission, TCBA should be comprised of 3 broadband liaisons, 1 from each county, and a board of advisors, the report states. Council members also firmed up plans to remove junk vehicles from public roads in Marfa. They will enter into an agreement with Rio Grande Towing of Presidio. The city will target vehicles that show signs of being abandoned for years, like vegetation growing through them. They have begun notifying owners of the long-abandoned vehicles via orange stickers, citations, and phone calls. Once cited, violators have 2 weeks to remove the vehicle or the city will tow vehicles to Presidio, where owners will pay for the towing mileage if they want to retrieve the vehicle. And if not, the city would cover the cost through the citation fees or code revenue. We're trying to get together a plan to actually get the towing done. It doesn't do us any good to tag it and say, you got to get rid of it, and not give people any way to do it, said City Manager Mandy Roan. Council also discussed 2 different future street improvement initiatives. They accepted an invitation from the company Park Hill to perform seal coating on Lincoln and Columbia streets. Those streets were chosen for the large-scale repairs because they are well-traveled and near the schools. Abiel Carrillo of KSA Engineering joined the meeting to talk through Mesa and Russell roadway improvement projects. He warned the original budget, which is over $500,000, might be stretched due to impacts of COVID-19. The city was originally planning on using the city budget to cover these improvements, but had opted to spend funds on a ground storage water tank instead. Carrillo made recommendations to the council on how to increase the likelihood of receiving grant funding for the project. He recommended the city focus on a strong narrative as well as transformative elements like larger sidewalks, which would increase walkability and safety. City Council unanimously agreed to a settlement concerning the Gregory Romeo Devil's Advocate Armory versus City of Marfa lawsuit in an executive session. The Big Bend Sentinel will report further details as they come to light. The meeting was bookended by concerns from Councilmember Buck Johnson regarding the redistricting of the county precincts. I do think we need to pay attention to this county commissioner redistricting. I think it's going to be a big issue for Marfa, said Johnson. Marfa cross country girls make great strides as Shawnez medals at state. Photo courtesy of University Interscholastic League. Marfa High School junior Umi Shawnez sprinted into a 5th place finish at the state cross country meet in Round Rock Friday. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Round Rock. On a brisk Friday morning last week, Marfa High School junior Umi Shawnez was entering the final stretch of the 2-mile track at the UIL Cross Country State Meet in Round Rock. There's a lot of runners that finish the race off by sprinting, so I was just nervous that somebody was going to pass me at the very end, Shawnez said this week. I was excited to finish, so I just sprinted and gave it my all. As she glanced at the time clock at the end of the course, she realized she was about to hit her personal record. Just across the finish line, her mother, Elizabeth Gutierrez, grandparents Arturo and Rosa Marie Gutierrez, Marfa Athletic Director Linda Ojeda, and her head coach, Edgar Ramirez, were screaming and cheering on Shawnez and her fellow Marfa runner, Andrea Garcia, who wasn't far behind. It was Shawnez's all that carried her to a 12:44:34 time and a fifth-place finish among all Texas cross-country girls from 1A schools like Marfa High School. It felt more real that I got fifth in state when I saw their faces and smiles like, wow, I did it. It warmed my heart. Under a minute later, Garcia broke her personal best as well, placing 33rd in the state. When we saw Umi coming in fifth, me and Coach Ojeda were crying, said Ramirez, who said that other than the emotional finishes by Shawnez and Garcia, the small Marfa team had come into the race with more confidence and calmness than previous years. I was calm, but what made me calm was them, the coach said about the lead up to the race. As a coach, you're always going to be nervous for your athletes, but they worked their butts off the whole year. Ramirez, who grew up in Presidio, became the coach last year and took the same two competitors to state. In 2020, Shawnez got 13th in state and Garcia got 58, showing the leaps each of them made in 1 year's time under the instruction of Ramirez. Coach Ramirez attributed the new attitude going into state to the fact that the girls had been there before and were more familiar with the course and the pressure that comes along with running in a massive pack of the state's finest cross-country runners. He also gave special recognition to a confidence and maturity that he said Shawnez and Garcia have developed in their time with the Marfa High School cross-country program. The girls, along with their teammates, have learned to show up to practice on time without complaint, even when it was moved up to a 6 a.m. start time. When Ramirez first introduced ice baths as a tool for muscle recovery, the girls balked at it, not wanting to endure the dunk into freezing temperatures. But eventually, they warmed up to the process. Not only did it help with recovery post-runs, it also built up their mental stamina and perseverance skills. Ice baths are tough, but it helped us get mentally tough because these girls know when they get in, they don't complain. They get in and get it over with, Ramirez said. Through this year, honestly, something just changed, Ramirez said. Their maturity level and work ethic changed, and their whole commitment to the sport was amazing. The girls have also learned to balance a full plate of school and extracurriculars, including sports that run through the same season. Shawnez and Garcia both play volleyball and traveled straight from a Thursday game to get to Round Rock for the Friday morning race. When they arrived, Coach Ramirez asked them how they were feeling, and they felt good to go, he said. When he asked again the morning of, they reconfirmed their preparedness. So when they were minutes away from starting the race, the coach said, "We knew what to do." They warmed up, said a prayer, and he imparted some final words of advice. "I always tell them, don't leave anything on the course. Always run as fast as you can. Don't leave anything there, because you don't want the regret of, man, I could have tried harder," he said, before adding, "Their calmness and maturity made me say, we're ready to go." Their preparation paid off, and the girls were able to make Marfa proud. However, last week's victory has only fueled the cross-country runners of Marfa to push even harder. In a team meeting this week, the girls and Coach Ramirez set their goals for next season. "Next year, I'll be running again," Shawnez reassured. "Next year, my goal is to win first place in regionals and place top three in state. Not only that, but for us to make it to state as a team and hopefully place top three in the state as a team as well. While only individual girls qualified for state this year, Ramirez hopes the girls' successes will fire up the whole team to push themselves further. "I just felt like finishing top five, it could motivate the girls to want it more and want that feeling more and to just know they can do it and that anything is possible," said Shanez. "I'm so blessed to have made history in Marfa, and I'm happy I got to represent Marfa at state." At regionals this year, Garcia was fifth overall in the region, only 6 seconds behind Shanez, so you know she has a little bit more to give, Ramirez said. He was confident that many of his current runners will be able to tap into their practice even harder and reach further than they did in 2021. Along with Shanez and Garcia, the team has Emily Hernandez, Soraya Valles, Leslie Torres, Leoni Salcido, and Cassandra Garcia. Made mostly of juniors, sophomores, and freshmen, the team is still sort of young, the coach said, which means he'll have more time to develop their skills. He also foresees growth in the team's numbers. "The first year I was here, cross country wasn't really a thing. These girls have made it a thing," he said. "I have junior high girls that are interested and ready to run in cross country. The girls have younger fans that want to be just like them." Speaking about Shanez's fifth place finish, Ramirez said, "What it signifies for our program is she made history." Though the school wasn't able to provide information about cross-country records going back in the school's history books, Shanez has at least reached an achievement in Marfa that hasn't been seen in recent history. And as a junior this year, it means she still has another year to sharpen those skills and meet Texas' best runners in 1 year's time. "These two girls are studs. They have set the example for the younger generation," Ramirez said. "They're slowly leaving a legacy. The whole team." Photo by Elizabeth Gutierrez. Andrea Garcia, Umi Shanez, and Coach Edgar Ramirez celebrate after the girls crossed the finish line on Friday. Precinct lines in Presidio and Marfa will shift as Commissioner's Court begins redistricting process. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. The Presidio County Commissioner's Court convened this past Monday to begin the process of redistricting its precincts, a project undertaken every 10 years as local officials review the latest census data. The 2020 federal census was late, thanks in part to the pandemic, throwing the Texas State Legislature into a chaotic special session and putting pressure on local governments to expedite the process. This year's numbers were scheduled to be released on April 1st, but were not formally announced until October 1st. In Presidio County, candidates hoping to run for office in the March primary elections, which include 2 seats on the Commissioner's Court, can file starting on November 13th. The race is on to complete the redistricting process as quickly and fairly as possible so potential candidates can register in the correct precinct. Stan Reed of Austin's Allison Bass and McGee Law Firm has been touring West Texas for weeks, helping some of the state's most rural and sparsely populated counties redraw their precincts. He was present at Monday's meeting with an interactive map of the census data so commissioners could see the numbers, census block by census block, and help them draw their own boundaries. Reed put it bluntly, "Some people live out here because they don't want to be counted," he told the court. "There's no question there's an undercount." The census numbers reflected a countywide population decline of 21.6%, a figure that officials in Presidio quibbled with. For now, we need something that will work with the numbers that we have, said Precinct 4 Commissioner Buddy Knight. The main challenge of Monday's meeting was shifting enough of Knight's constituents, whose Precinct 4 currently covers most of the city of Marfa and far northwest Presidio County, to make up for a gap in Jose Cabasuela's Precinct 3, which covers northwestern Presidio City, Ruidosa, and Candelaria. Reed and the commissioners worked clockwise, starting in Marfa and making their way around the map. As of 1876, the Texas State Constitution requires that each county have 4 commissioners who work alongside a county judge. The process for deciding which commissioners represent who got a lot more specific in 1968 when the Supreme Court ruled in Avery versus Midland County that it was a violation of the 14th Amendment's Unequal Protection Clause to have wildly different population counts between precincts. Before 1968, there was one commissioner representing the city of Midland with a population of about 67,000. Midland County's 3 other commissioners represented distinct rural areas, each with populations under 1,000. While the Avery ruling recognized that rural constituents were often more directly impacted by county business than their urban counterparts, for example, highway maintenance and property taxes fall under county jurisdiction, it was unconstitutional to apportion county commissioners based on anything other than population. That's how the contemporary numbers game was born. Today, commissioner precincts can't legally deviate from each other in population by more than 10%, and to avoid litigation, it's best to keep that number as close to zero as possible. In Presidio and Brewster counties, that has required many Big Bend County commissioners to do double duty, representing long, skinny precincts that cover a small portion of a populous area and a huge swath of mostly unoccupied land reaching down to another South County population center. Many census blocks in Reed's presentation were empty, making what he referred to as clean lines impossible to achieve. By law, precincts must follow obvious boundaries like survey lines, highways, or waterways. Pair that with the population distribution laws, and it can be a complicated process. This isn't easy stuff, Reed said as those gathered in the courthouse gazed at the maps. By the end of Monday's meeting, a few blocks on the far southern boundaries of Marfa were added to Commissioner Brenda Bentley's district, who then lost a few blocks of her small toehold in northeast Presidio City to Commissioner Eloy Aranda's Precinct 2. The northwestern edge of Presidio shifted to add population to Cabasuela's Precinct 3. Presidio County residents will have the opportunity to weigh in on these new boundaries at public hearings scheduled this upcoming Monday in Presidio at 10 a.m. in the County Annex and in Marfa at 3 p.m. in the County Courthouse before commissioners vote whether to adopt the boundaries on Monday afternoon. Redistricting the commissioner's court could lead to shifts in other types of districts. Voting precincts will be next on the list in advance of quickly approaching spring primary elections. Compared to commissioner precincts, voting precincts follow similar boundaries but are smaller, designed for the convenience of the voter. There are currently 7 voting precincts in Presidio County. Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace David Beebe also raised the possibility of redistricting judicial precincts. Presidio County's 2 judicial precincts are a lower priority because they aren't a legislative body, so laws about representation don't apply. Still, Beebe, who will step down from his post in December, hoped the county would consider shifting boundaries to make the job a little easier for his successor. Currently, Precinct 1 oversees the bulk of traffic tickets and accidents on Highway 67, about 500 a month. Beebe proposed that cutting 67 in half at Elephant Rock near Shafter could more equally distribute the burden between the two precincts. County Judge Cinderella Guevara suggested waiting until after the legislative districts were in place to discuss those possibilities further. Despite the time crunch, the commissioners took the time to field concerns from Presidio city officials that reflect an ongoing conversation about the efficacy and accuracy of census counts in a region as vast and rugged as the Big Bend. The county will move forward with redistricting despite the fact that many city and county officials suspect a significant undercount in southern Presidio County. One estimate proposed a gap of almost 1,600 people. The city of Presidio is seeking assistance from the Texas State Demographer to challenge the census count, a process that will begin in January. The Big Bend Sentinel's coverage of that process is ongoing. Technically, the county can change its boundaries more frequently than every 10 years, and it is possible to use metrics other than the census to determine boundaries, though Reed has never personally seen it done. "Anytime you step out of that box, you're taking a risk," he warned. Presidio Mayor John Ferguson was present at Monday's meeting and gave the final draft of the new boundaries a personal thumbs up. "I think the city, census-wise, was significantly undercounted, but what we have here, I'm okay with it." A map of precinct changes that commissioners are considering.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, November 11th, 2021. Battery facility gets green light, by Megan Waring. Data centers are increasing in popularity across the state of Texas, especially in the western region, which has generated the need for energy storage facilities. On November 8th, Pecos County Commissioner's Court adopted a resolution establishing the St. Gall Reinvestment Zone and approved a tax abatement agreement for two battery storage facilities. The tax abatement agreement was granted to defer the tax to an annual pilot for $57,300 for a 10-year period. Each of these projects are 100-megawatt battery storage facilities that are adjacent to the substation on 285, said Director Remy Ramos. "I think the petroleum industry sees now that over the long haul, people who want to stay in energy need to transition into clean energy resources," said Randy Sowell, developer with Jupiter Power. "This is something that has been understood in Pecos County for a long time. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas has been contemplating a rule change from last year to limit non-thermal resources to 125 megawatts, causing the St. Gall project to be split into two facilities. Just like in every industry right now, an equipment supply shortage has already delayed construction. We're dealing with supply chain issues like the rest of the world," Sal said. "It looks like the equipment and shipping will move the first phase completion into the first quarter. Construction will cost an estimated $60 million for St. Gall Energy Storage Phase 1 and should be completed by the end of next year. St. Gall Energy Storage Phase 2 will require the same investment and should be completed by the end of 2023. Vaccine is available for 5 to 11-year-olds, by Nathan Heuer. The Pfizer COVID vaccine will be available to kids ages 5 to 11 in Old Pecos County beginning on Thursday, November 11th. Parents and guardians wanting to get their child vaccinated in that age range can schedule an appointment with the Family Care Center at Pecos County Memorial Hospital by calling 432-336-2291. Appointment times for children from ages 5 to 11 will be on Thursdays from 1:30 p.m. to 4. For individuals 12 years and older, Friday will be the designated day to schedule an appointment. PCMH CEO Betsy Briscoe said that the decision to make the vaccine available to youths between 5 and 11 comes after Center for Disease Control's recommendation. CDC recommended it, and that's what we're waiting for. The PCMH CEO added that the dose of the vaccine for children between 5 and 11 will be less than the vaccine dose for people 12 and older. One aspect of the shot that will be the same for children is the days between the first and second dose. The recommended time period between shots is 3 to 4 weeks. As of November 9th, there were 18 kids between the ages of 5 to 11 that were signed up to get their first Pfizer shot. With the Pfizer vaccine now becoming available to the youth, children between the ages of 5 and 11 were added to the vaccination rates in the county. According to state data, there are 1,538 kids that reside in Pecos County that are between 5 and 11. The numbers shifted the percent of fully people fully vaccinated in the county who are vaccinated eligible from 65% to 58%. People who have received one shot doses dropped from 74% to 65%. Booster shot numbers were not affected by the availability of the shot to children ages 5 to 11 due to the fact that only individuals 18 years and older can get a booster shot. As of November 8th, there were 1,325 Pecos County residents who received the booster shot. The number is the 106-person increase from data shown on November 3rd. Franco's Continue Family Healthcare Tradition by Rebecca Bell. Taylor and Andrew Franco are half-siblings who come along from a long line of nurses and healthcare workers, and they both are following through with their family tradition at the Midland College Williams Regional Technical Training Center in Fort Stockton. Taylor graduated in August 2020 and is now currently taking classes in MC's Associate Degree Nursing Program to train to become a registered nurse. Andrew graduated from the vocational nursing program in August 2021, and he hopes to begin the associate degree nursing program next summer. Even though Taylor is going to school full-time and Andrew just graduated, both are employed and helping to fulfill the demand for qualified nurses in the Permian Basin. Taylor works part-time at Cactus Health Services in Fort Stockton, and Andrews works at Family Walk-In Clinic. "I want to stay in Fort Stockton," Andrew said. "This is where I grew up. I want to help the people in the community through health care. Working as a nurse in a small town environment allows me the opportunity to help bring babies into the world and be there when people take their last breath." Taylor isn't sure if she wants to remain in Fort Stockton when she completes her degree, but is currently enjoying her time in her homeland. "I really like living in Fort Stockton," she said. "However, one of the nice things about nursing is that it's a job that I've always needed everywhere. I've had the opportunity to accomplish my clinical hours in hospitals and clinics in Midland and Odessa, as well as the Big Spring State Hospital, and I've enjoyed every setting. Some of her favorite areas to work in the medical field is labor and delivery, as well as the ER. Andrew said that if he had to move somewhere and specialize in a specific area, it would probably be in med-surg nursing. Taylor and Andrew have the same father and were born just 4 months apart to different mothers. Taylor graduated from Fort Stockton High School in 2018, and Andrew graduated a year later in 2019. They started their taking courses at MC's Branch Campus in Fort Stockton while still in high school through the dual credit program, which allowed them to obtain both high school and college credit for general education courses such as English, history, and government. "Taking that dual credit courses allowed me to get most of my prerequisite courses completed while I was still in high school," Taylor said. "That helped make it really nice when I started taking nursing courses because I was able to just concentrate on my nursing skills. I'll graduate from the associate degree program this coming May, if all goes well, according to Andrew. He will complete the associate degree nursing program in May of 2023. I've always wanted to have a profession where I could help others, but I really made up my mind to become a nurse in 2014 when my grandmother was ill. Her nurses showed her the best care imaginable, and they also showed compassion and caring for the entire family. I want to be able to give that same care to somebody at their worst moment. Hasty demolition improves near local neighborhoods, by Jeremy Gonzalez. Fort Stockton's Substandard Building Committee was formed to ensure public safety by securing, repairing, or removing local properties that are abandoned or deemed hazardous. Another success story has resulted from the committee's meetings, with 802 West Gallagher securing new ownership and bringing the property up to compliance. The property once held an adobe home and an illegal backyard dwelling, which resulted in numerous citations from the city and was an eyesore for the neighboring houses. The adobe structure caught fire Thursday, July 29th, and in result, the charred house was condemned by the city's code enforcement office. The condemned property then landed on the Substandard Building Committee's list and was reviewed in early October. Following the meeting, a swift change in ownership led for demolition permits to be pulled, and the entire property was cleared out within a matter of weeks. The property was short-lived on the committee's list, which makes it one of the fastest turnarounds for a critical property. The new owners, who wish to remain anonymous, said that three roll-off dumpsters containers were filled from the cleanup efforts.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, November 4th. Interview with gubernatorial candidate Don Huffines. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Republican gubernatorial candidate Don Huffines of Dallas is challenging Texas incumbent Governor Greg Abbott in the 2022 election year. In an exclusive interview with the Monahans News, Huffines discussed several key elements of his campaign, including elimination of property tax, border security, protecting the oil industry, state highways, star testing, and more. At numerous times during the interview, he stated, quote, "I'm not going to ask for permission from the federal government. I'm just going to get it done," end quote. Property tax. Question. You are proposing phasing out property tax. How will that revenue be replaced? Huffines, quote, "We will keep taxes from other sources, including sales tax, severance tax, hotel motel tax, franchise taxes, and others. It will be an 8-year process under my plan. Revenue sources have increased about 8% per year for the past 10 years. That creates an extra $67 billion per year. We can take that money and buy down property tax. It is doable. Sales tax would increase for a while and then could be brought back down when property tax is gone. Residents will vote on this as a constitutional amendment so everyone can weigh in on it. You have to have the leadership to do it, and I am that leader. Property tax is a terrible way to fund government. It's terrible. In many towns, property taxes represent almost 50% of the total house payment, and that is unacceptable," end quote. Question. Property taxes mostly support local entities. How will elimination of property tax affect those entities? Huffines. Good question. The budgeting process will not change, except the funds will come from the state instead of property tax. But the local entities will still maintain their local control. Over 50% of school funding already comes from the state. Not going to change funding formulas. All we are doing is changing the funding sources. Question. What can be done to improve state highways, especially in the Permian Basin? Huffines. I was on the Transportation Committee as a state senator. Funding for highways is critically important, and it needs to be more equitable around the state. We are doing better, but funds don't keep up with demand. I'm a big supporter of infrastructure. A few years ago, the funding formulas changed and highways suffered. That changed when I was in the Senate. The funding has improved, but it still takes time to design it, bid it, fund it, and build it. Question: how can you protect the oil industry, as the Permian Basin is vital to not only Texas, but the nation? Huffines. It's all about leadership, and no excuses, I really mean it. Governor Abbott is a prime example of a career politician. He has been a politician for over 30 years and has never drawn a paycheck from anything else. This is a big issue for Texas. I am a business guy and have invested in oil resources. I'm not a politician. Fracking will not be stopped. The country needs to understand I'm not going to ask the federal government for permission, just get it done. I'm never going to honor any federal law to stop fracking. We have to protect the sovereignty of Texas first. I'll make sure that happens. I will have your back. Question: you have stated you will put economic pressure on Mexico. How? Huffines. We have to finish the wall and spend the money to do so. I'm not for spending money on things we don't need to do, but this is needed. I'll have the Texas National Guard to stop them. There are 25 bridges between Texas and Mexico. We will protect them all. We will start this within 30 days after I take office. It's an outrage and an affront to our lawful taxpaying citizens who are forced to spend billions each year on housing, schooling, and medical care for illegal aliens. The United States Constitution allows for states to protect their borders if the federal government isn't, and they clearly are not. We will also implement E-Verify and weed out illegals in schools. It is costing the state $6 billion a year for students that have no legal right to be here. Right now, there are about 400,000 aliens in our schools. We have to stop what attracts illegals. While we hope to restore a positive relationship with Mexico, they are a very bad neighbor right now. I will use severe economic pressure to incentivize Mexico to control the cartels and secure their side of the border. We will create a situation in Mexico's best interest to help and be held accountable to fight the cartels and secure their side of the river. It will be painful for a while, but so is curing cancer. What are your thoughts on the state-mandated STAR, State of Texas Assessments of Academic Readiness? Huffines. I am not in favor of the current STAR system. It takes too much time for educators, and having them teach the test is not in the best interest of students. I'm a big supporter of education. There is also a great deal of wasted resources by school administrators to keep up with unnecessary state mandates. There does need to be accountability. That was the idea behind this, but we can do better. About Don Huffines. Quote, I'm not in this for a political career. I'm in it to support Texas. We have these solutions, and I have the courage to implement them. It is that simple, he said. My goal is to represent the sovereignty of Texas and Texans and put Texas first. I'm the only elected office holder in Texas Senate history that never took any money from the state. No salary, pension, travel vouchers, nothing. I'm going to do the same thing as governor. I'm going to make sure that Texas gets its swagger back, and you can quote me on that. End quote. Huffines served two terms in the Texas State Senate from 2015 to 2019, representing District 16 in Dallas County. He is a fifth-generation Texan, husband, father, grandfather, and self-made businessman. Born in 1958, Huffines was raised in Dallas alongside his three brothers. He grew up greasing cars for the family business, Huffines Motor Company. He graduated from the University of Texas with a Bachelor of Arts in Finance and started a real estate development company in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He and his wife of 34 years, Catherine, have five children and two grandchildren. During his time in office, he authored legislation supporting term limits, pro-life measures, constitutional carry, and school choice. The blue wave election of 2018 resulted in Democrats taking virtually all of Dallas County, including Don's seat and the Texas Senate. He announced his candidacy for governor in May of this year. Driver cited after hitting teen in crosswalk near Tatum Elementary. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A 15-year-old boy is recovering from injuries he sustained after being struck by a vehicle in the crosswalk near Tatum Elementary early Wednesday morning. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, quote, officers received a call around 7:24 a.m. regarding a child being struck by a vehicle in the crosswalk at the intersection of 17th and Calvin Streets, end quote. The driver, Benjamin Hendricks of Monahans, was driving a 2020 Dodge Journey southbound in the 1600 block of Calvin Street and was attempting to turn west into the 300 block of East 17th Street. Quote, Hendricks told the officers he didn't see the teen in the crosswalk when he turned the corner, Quintana said. The teenager, who was not named, was transported to Ward Memorial Hospital to be treated for minor injuries. Quote, school crossing guards were on hand near the crosswalk, but were posted on the sidewalk when the accident happened, he added. According to Superintendent of Schools Chad Smith, quote, crossing guards should be in the crosswalk when anyone is crossing the street, children or adults. When no one is in the crosswalk, the guard stands on the sidewalk, end quote. Hendricks was cited for failure to yield to pedestrian in the crosswalk, a Class C misdemeanor. Commissioners approve precinct boundary changes. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward County commissioners met in special session on Wednesday morning to discuss a potential change in the four county precincts. According to state statutes, the highest percentage away from perfect balance to the lowest cannot exceed 10%. Based on the 2020 census, that differential was over a 12% change from the 2010 census. Sam Reed of the law firm of Allison and Bass presented the current data. Quote, the data is based on census and not voter registration, Reed said. The ideal distribution would have the exact same number of people in each precinct. In Ward County, Precinct 1 is over the ideal 1.92% with an overage of 56 residents with a total of 2,967. Precinct 2 is over by 91 residents, or 3%, with a total of 3,001. Precinct 3 is over by 113 residents, or 3%, with 3,024. Precinct 4 had the largest departure, with a loss of 260 people, a minus 8.9%, with 2,651 people. According to data presented by Reed, the ideal population in each precinct would be 2,911 residents. The computer program employed by Reed allowed graphically showing the population in every resident block in the county, and then the software would allow moving blocks from one precinct to another in order to achieve the correct balance. The commissioners adopted a change to change boundaries for 131 residents, moving them from Precinct 3 to Precinct 4. The change affects residents approximately along the east of State Highway 18, north to 10th Street, and west to Dwight Avenue. The changes to Precinct 3 will be 0.6%, with 18 less residents from the ideal, and Precinct 4 will be minus 4%, with 128 less residents from the ideal. The total variance would then be 7.5% across the four precincts, meeting state statutes. Before the change can be finalized, the county must publish a legal notice in the Monahans News and then hold a public hearing on the proposed change and then have a final vote. The legal notice will be in the November 11th edition of the Monahans News, and the public hearing will be held on November 22nd. Commissioners present were Tino Sanchez, Larry Hanna, Dexter Nichols, and Eddie Nelms. Judge Greg Holly was also in attendance. Car chase ends with accident, two arrests. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A routine traffic stop ended with a chase through town and the arrest of James Lee Pennington, age 46, of Odessa, and Christy Larie Elliott, age 40, of Midland, both on felony charges. Monahans police officer Adrian Gonzalez attempted to conduct a routine traffic stop for a speeding violation about 1:40 a.m. on October 25th in the 300 block of Seeley Street, but Pennington failed to stop and the chase began. Pennington then led police on a chase through town that continued southbound to Alice Street, then to 3rd Street, crossed Main to Allen Street, back to Seeley, before getting T-boned at the intersection of Calvin and Seeley Streets. Quote, officer conducted a felony stop on the vehicle and detained Pennington. Elliott was the front seat passenger in the vehicle and was found to be in possession of a controlled substance, MPD Captain Christopher Quintana said. Both Pennington and Elliott were transported to Ward Memorial Hospital to be treated for minor injuries. The driver of the 18-wheeler was not injured. Pennington was subsequently arrested and charged with evading arrest with a motor vehicle, a third-degree felony, and Elliott was booked for and possession of a controlled substance, a state jail felony. Bond for both Pennington and Elliott was set at $10,000 each, and both were released after posting the bond. Low voter turnout in election. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. A total of 412 votes were cast for the November 2nd 8 constitutional amendment election, including 3 absentee votes, 137 early votes, and 270 election day votes. The voter turnout was less than 7% of the approximately 6,200 registered voters in the county. All 8 amendments passed in the county. Proposition 1 passed by a total vote count of 356 to 56. Proposition 2 passed by a vote count of 220 to 189. Proposition 3 passed by a count of 344 to 68. Proposition 4 passed by a count of 234 to 173. Proposition 5 passed by a count of 239 for and 166 against. Proposition 6 passed by a count of 367 to 48. Proposition 7 passed by a total count of 373 to 38. And Proposition 8 passed by a count of 382 to 30. Statewide, only about 9% of registered voters went to the polls. All 8 propositions passed statewide.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.